This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Wisconsin voters have chosen, some of them anyway, Sauk County Circuit Court Judge Michael Skrunek and Milwaukee County Circuit Court Judge Rebecca Dallet advanced in the primaries yesterday for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. The two will face off in the general election on April 3rd. Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief. He just snuck into the studio with us. Sean, welcome back.
You gave it away. I did sneak in.
Actually, we keep Sean sitting here all the time, right. A little behind the scenes secret. Let's start, before we get to the results, Sean, let's talk about turnout. Primary election for Supreme Court is the only statewide race on the ballot, not traditionally your recipe for high turnout.
This is traditionally the lowest turnout election in Wisconsin, the February nonpartisan primary. It can often be around 7% in Wisconsin. So the last couple elections, this one and the one before it, we've been higher than that, you know, more in the neighborhood of 12%. Certainly still a low turnout election, but a sign that more people are paying attention to it.
And the Supreme Court has gotten a lot of attention for a variety of reasons, a lot of them political, a lot of people putting a partisan spin on the people currently on the court, the people running for the court. Is that part of why maybe voters are paying more attention? Not a ton, but more attention?
It's definitely not a mystery which party identifies with which candidate. And that was especially so this time around when you actually had one of the candidates, Tim Burns, coming out and saying, I'm a Democrat. I'm a liberal. I will uphold Democratic and liberal values on the court. You also had Burns and Rebecca Dallet appear at the Democratic State Convention last year. Now, they took different approaches there. Dallet was basically there to court Democratic voters without coming out and saying it in the way that Burns did. But, they were both pretty outspoken about where they stood on issues like President Trump, for example, both critical of President Trump. And then you had Judge Skrunek on the other side, who didn't say much about his own politics, but his political allies made clear that they supported him. So the governor or U.S. Senate candidate Leah Vukmir, a prominent Republican. The Republican Party spent $142,000 on Skrunek's behalf. That's never happened before in Wisconsin. So it's pretty clear where the parties lie on this officially nonpartisan race.
And let's look at the results. What were the margins here?
So Skrunek won. He had about 46% of the vote. Rebecca Dallet got 36%. Tim Burns, about 18%. So what you're seeing there is that Skrunek, the conservative, won, and that the Democratic vote was split between Dallet and Burns. So in races like these, the top two vote getters emerge to the general election. So in that case, this is Skrunek and Dallet.
So let's give a listen to each of them in turn and what they might be reading from this primary election, starting with Michael Skrunek. Here is a listen to him talking to WPR reporter Chuck Quirnbach last night.
That the justices on our court need to uphold the rule of law. They need to respect the separation of powers, and they need to interpret the Constitution as it was originally intended, and not try to invent new rights or to be creative from the bench. And so that's been my message from day one. My opponents, both of my opponents, articulated a very different view and vision for the court, and that is one of advocacy from the bench.
And so Judge Skrunek has been saying this. He said it when we interviewed him on this show. I'm not going to, he said, take a position on issues or values as his opponents did. But for Republican voters, for conservative voters, in looking at who supported him, as you were saying, maybe all the signal they need.
Yeah, I mean, in Republican judicial race, the strategy, I guess, for Republicans in judicial races is to have the candidates say what you just heard from Michael Skrunek, that they'll uphold the rule of law. They won't be judicial activists. You could have heard that same message from and probably did hear a very similar message from Justice Rebecca Bradley in the last election or from Justice Michael Gableman when he ran a decade ago. That is the blueprint for conservative candidates. But then you have the business lobby out in the form of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce running ads on Skrunek's behalf, and the Republican Party using its formidable machine in Wisconsin to work on behalf of Skrunek. And, that plus the split vote between Dallet and Burns made him the top vote getter on Tuesday.
And let's listen to Rebecca Dallet also talking yesterday to reporter Chuck Quirnbach.
Wisconsinites clearly want someone who will stand up for our core values, someone who will protect our civil and human rights, someone who will restore the integrity of our courts. And let there be no mistake, big money and the special interests have had outsized influence today. If the people don't show up to save our state in April, big money and the special interests will win.
Rebecca Dallet there. Now, in contrast to Tim Burns, she didn't specifically say what she thought of particular issues. She didn't identify herself as a Democrat. She's been saying, again, including on this show, she is saying what her values are and that that's important to let voters know.
Yeah, she said that she kind of drew that distinction, that she wouldn't wade into an issue that could come before the court that in the way that Burns had. She did weigh in on cases that the court had decided. For example, the John Doe case, the case that the court took that closed the John Doe investigation involving Governor Scott Walker and conservative groups. She's been very critical of that, essentially saying the court made the wrong call and that, you know, this is something that people should be concerned about because it can lead to dark money in political contests in Wisconsin. So it's not like she hasn't said anything. But she doesn't weigh in so much on the news of the day or hasn't weighed in so much on the news of the day as Burns has, and certainly not as explicitly as he did.
We're talking about last night's Supreme Court primary results with Sean Johnson. He's WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief. He stays with us, and you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the Supreme Court race? What do you think about the partisan angle to it? Should judges wear their values on their sleeve, their issues? Does it matter who supports and donates to a candidate in a court race? Or should this really be nonpartisan in tone and style and substance? Call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our discussion with WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson, looking at the Wisconsin Supreme Court primary election held yesterday. Michael Skrenick and Rebecca Dallet, both judges in Wisconsin, they advanced to the general election in April. To your calls now at 800-642-1234. Alex is with us in Milwaukee. Alex, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What do you think?
I was just going to say that, you know, I don't think any election won't be partisan until they get rid of all the special funding that they have in this election. I mean, unless they make it illegal for nobody, no super PACs, no normal PACs, no donors, no political parties, you know, funding judges that are supposed to be independent, then we'll never, you know, get over the farce that supposedly, you know, they're completely independent-minded. And I was for Tim Burns, and yeah, he did say that, you know, he was a Democrat, and you know, I did like his bold stance. I like at least that he admits the fact that he knows this is a partisan race, and until we get all the special money out of there, they should just admit it and wear it on their sleeve.
Alex, thanks for the call. Sean, it doesn't look like we're on the verge of getting rid of money in court elections here in Wisconsin.
No, I mean, money's going to come in here pretty fast in a big way in Wisconsin's race. I think you're going to see national money flow in here because I mean, the parties know how important the Supreme Court of any state is to what happens there. There are, you know, seven people in Wisconsin Supreme Court. They're a co-equal branch of government. Each of them serves 10-year terms, and they can make or break a governor and a legislature's agenda. So the parties are definitely involved in these races, and money's definitely going to get more involved.
Thanks for the call, Alex. We'll go next to Joan in Madison. Joan, hi.
Yeah, hi. I'm an attorney. And I have 2 points to make. One, that previous caller talking about the money in this election. And legal counsel for a group called United to Amend is working on the 28th Amendment to overturn Citizens United to get rid of all of this dark money. And we're so long, far away from the kind of Supreme Court we had before that was clean and pretty nonpartisan. So that's the first point. It is pretty disturbing to know that $142,000 was spent on the Republican side to get Michael nominated. Secondly, my concern is, as an attorney, is that when he puts out the line, as you said, has been the line for years when these candidates run to the Supreme Court, is that they are originalists and that they are going to, you know, toe the line and follow the Constitution strictly and not the activist. That is a line that most lay persons do not understand. It sounds like you're adhering to the Constitution and you are going to be a clean, nonpartisan, no views into your interpretation. There's another whole interpretation of the Constitution which says the Constitution was meant to evolve. We didn't have the internet during the founding time. We didn't have the highways we have, and that the Constitution needs to evolve.
Joan, thanks a lot for the call. Sean, I want to get into looking a little bit ahead now at the general election in April. So Michael Skrenik could look at these results and say, hey, I won by a pretty big margin. I'm happy about this. Rebecca Dalek could look at this and say, my votes plus Tim Burns' votes is greater than Skrenik's votes, and Tim Burns voters probably aren't going to switch over to Skrenik. What do you make of the different spins on that?
Okay, so we can start first with the case for why this was a good election for Dalit. I mean, she was a second place vote getter here. But if you look at Dalit plus Burns, you know, their percentages, they're at about 54% of the vote in this race. I mean, if that were to just transfer over to the April election, that'd be good for her. And that happened at a time when outside groups were spending more heavily on Skrenik on his behalf than they were on Dalit. So, you know, that's a case for her. And now that she's the Democratic candidate, Democratic money is going to flow to her campaign specifically. The case for why this was good for Skrenik, that a similar pattern happened in the 2016 nonpartisan primary. In February of 2016, the two Democratic candidates outpolled now Justice Rebecca Bradley. And, you know, she went on to win that April election. So it's, you can't just look at the February contest and say, well, you know, combine their votes here, transfer that over to April, it's going to be a win for Dalit, because that didn't happen in 2016. You know, and then the obvious case for Skrenik is that he won yesterday. I mean, he was a top vote getter by 10%. Dalit and Burns, you know, on a whole, received fewer votes than you saw Michael Donald and Joanne Kloppenburg receive in that 2016 election, too. So, you know, we're seeing signs of Democratic waves in elections all over the country, special elections. We had one in our state Senate contest for the 10th Senate district here that looked like it might be a signal of a wave. You didn't see a signal of a wave in this race. I mean, that, you know, that Democratic movement that you're seeing elsewhere didn't really show up in the February primary here in Wisconsin.
We'll leave it there. Sean, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're welcome, Rob.
That's Sean Johnson, WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief. We were talking with him about the results of last night's Supreme Court primary outcome in Wisconsin. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Too legit to quit. It's catchy because it rhymes. It's an example of a rhyming compound, a quick little rhyming phrase that adds some zest to the way we talk and or rap. We commonly use rhyming compounds to add a little bit of zaniness to everyday living, maybe even without thinking about it. At a restaurant, we might wine and dine, or if we're bill-skipping scofflaws, we might eat it and beat it. Is there a rhyme you hear a lot in your day-to-day life? Maybe there's some workplace jargon or family phrase that you love or really drives you nuts. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 to share your rhyme. Joining us now is Grant Barrett. He's a dictionary editor and linguist. He specializes in slang and new words. You know him as the co-host of Away With Words, a national public radio program about language. It airs Sunday mornings at 9 on the Ideas Network. Grant, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, nice to talk to you.
Well, here's our rhyming compound. It's Barrett and Ferret talking about rhymes. What is a rhyming compound? What do we mean by that, Grant?
It's two or more words put together in a way that makes a miniature rhyme on its own. So wine and dine is a great one because we've got two words whose meaning we know. We paired them together with and suddenly we've got this new phrase that means something else. And there's so many of these in English, so many of these. Slice and dice is another one that probably everyone uses and thinks of, and it just passes right through, and you don't think, oh, that's kind of sweet how nice that works out, slice and dice.
And what kind of purpose do these serve, having all these handy little rhyming phrases?
Well, we all love to play with language. Even the most staid, boring speaker of English likes to goof around. And these little bits of rhyme are probably one of the most fundamental elements of making language a little more interesting. In this particular case, with rhyming compounds, we're making it a little bit irreverent. So even if we're talking about something serious, like drill and kill, which is when soldiers do military training and then they go out and they use that training in order to defeat the enemy, drill and kill still has a slightly irreverent tone to it.
And what are some more common examples that we might encounter in daily life? I know you've been hunting for more obscure ones, but give us some more examples of ones we might have run into.
Oh, I love them all. Let's see. Gloom and doom.
Gloom and doom is a good one, yeah.
Shake and bake. We all know the product, right?
Right, and that's, I'll stop you there, because that's one, it's like an easy instruction. I know what I'm going to do with this product in three words.
You just know the marketing people for that product were so excited when they figured that one out. Three words, that's all we need on the box, three words. Hey, let's make it the title of the product, right? Meet and greet, that's another one, which is nice. Surf and turf, when you have the seafood and the steak. I went to a Mexican restaurant here in San Diego recently, and unfortunately in Spanish, in Mexican restaurants, surf and turf doesn't rhyme, so it's nice in English. Pump and dump maybe is a little less common for our listeners, and maybe that's a good thing. That's when scammers artificially inflate the price of a stock, and then when the price goes up, they sell all the stock that they own that they've just been hyping, and then they make a little bit of money.
I want to bring on a caller now with a rhyme at 800-642-1234. Chris is with us in Eau Claire. Chris, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. You got a rhyme for us, Chris?
Yeah. So one of the things that I've done a lot is when anyone asks me how I'm doing, I always respond to them with, oh, I'm dandy like candy.
And Chris, what kind of response do you get to that?
Sometimes it's a little quizzical look, like I've never heard that one before, but more likely what happens is they're like, oh my gosh, that's awesome. And then I tell them, take it, use it, steal it, just push it into the world.
Can I ask, Chris, are you a dad?
I am not, but I love dad jokes.
Okay, because I was going to say, you're creeping into dad joke territory, so I can just about promise I'll use that one. Grant, when you look at these, are you inspired to have a catchphrase in daily life, like dandy like candy, like Chris's?
Well, because I dabble in language, or because I'm part of the language dodge, as William Sapphire used to say, I know a lot more of these than most people, and they do kind of spill out the corners of my mouth anytime I'm not paying attention. So absolutely, even if I'm not meaning to be funny or not meaning to use this stuff, it's just there and ready, and I can just pour it out at a moment's notice.
Chris, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Grant, as we mentioned, you collect these, you've been writing about them, and you sent us some examples that I think take a little more explanation. So let's start off with the old drag and brag. What is that?
So in brief, drag and brag is show and tell. You drag something to the front of the room, and then you show it off. But more specifically, drag and brag, say, in the show car business, where people have these fancy renovated automobiles that have been completely redone, a drag and brag might be where you bring your car out to show off to all the other car owners and talk about all the work you did to the body and the engine and everything else. Or sometimes it's just brag about how little you paid for it or how many hours you put into it. So there's a lot of different ways that these play out. One thing I find again and again and again is that rhyming compounds are recreated and recoined. And so, for example, I mentioned drill and kill as a military training plus then using the weapons to actually defeat the enemy. Well, there's also a drill and kill in extermination. It's a method by which you get rid of termites. And there's a drill and kill in interviewing job candidates, where you drill them with a lot of important questions, and then you basically defeat and kill all their interest in the company because you bored them so much. And so there's a ton of this stuff, again and again and again, because we intuitively understand the morphology of English. We intuitively know how to put these things together and make them for ourselves. So they keep being recreated with new meaning.
Let's go back to our callers. Justin is on the line in Stevens Point. Justin, hi.
Hi. I have a rhyme for you, but it's in Portuguese.
Okay.
So in Stevens Point, there's a really great restaurant for lunches and breakfast called the Wooden Chair. But the Wooden Chair, as a phrase, is not rhyming. But in Portuguese, it's Cadeira de Madeira.
And now wait, which is the actual name of the restaurant? Does the sign say the Wooden Chair or the Portuguese phrase that can't repeat?
The sign says the Wooden Chair, yep. And then the Portuguese, I had some Portuguese friends. I dated a Portuguese person for a while. So we thought that was cool.
Justin, thank you so much. That's a very subtle use in an English-speaking country to have that Portuguese rhyme hidden there, Grant.
So nice, though, right?
Yeah. In marketing, we mentioned shake and bake. Is this something that works well or could potentially work well in marketing?
It can, but you're kind of limited. You got to squeeze yourself into this template. Certainly rhyming in jingles. Think about how long advertising jingles have been with us to get you to remember a product, not only because the melody is kind of an earworm, but because the thing is repeatable. The rhymes make things easier to remember and then easier to relay. And so certainly advertising people, I worked in advertising for a long time, certainly advertising people are totally looking for these rhymes. But boy, you got to be super careful with them because of all these double meanings, right?
I Like Ike is one that leaps to mind for the President Dwight Eisenhower and his campaign. And when I thought of, it's not fully a rhyme, but stop, drop, and roll for, you know, mm-hmm. fire. The stop, drop part really locks that into your brain, I think.
Yeah, and it's also got the XYZ ABC rhythm to it, right? So we are used to thinking things in sets of threes. This is a long-standing thing that has been discussed in folklore for a very long time. Sets of three are somehow culturally interesting to us. So that's a part of what's happening there, too.
Let's go back to our callers. Harry is with us in Milwaukee. Harry, hi.
Hi. I've got an aviation term for you. It's yank and bank.
Yank and bank. How would that work operationally?
You're trying to impress somebody. You're taking off, and you pull up or you yank back on the stick to climb, and at the same time, you turn sharply, and so it looks like you're trying to impress your girlfriend on the ground.
Okay, well, I will not be impressed if I'm in the plane with you, Harry. Thanks a lot for sharing that one. There's another one on your list that I think is aviation-related. Turn and burn or churn and burn?
Yeah, churn and burn. So I've got 5 or 6 different definitions of churn and burn, and this particular aviation one is to fly in such a way that you give the electronic appearance of being a larger number of aircraft. So let's say that you're just a handful of aircraft. Well, you might fly around and do kind of ridiculous maneuvers and not do a straight line so that the enemy looking at their radar or their sensors might not be sure if you're the same aircraft that was, you know, a little distance away just a few seconds ago.
Oh, so you're kind of churning up the signal there for them. It took me a while to figure that one out.
Yeah, in sports, both in baseball and football, there are churn and burn maneuvers that have to do with a kind of first grinding out this advantage and then burning once you kind of get a clear shot to the home run or the end goal.
And I've heard when my kids were playing soccer, turn and burn, as in you've just stolen the ball from the other team at a certain age, you now need to turn around and go back toward the other goal and burn, like turn on the afterburners, run real fast.
Yep, exactly.
Let's see, what's another? Tend and befriend is one that was on your list. What's that for?
Now, how about that? If I didn't tell you what tend and befriend meant, what would you think?
I'm taking care of the people around me and getting to be good friends with them, I guess.
Yeah. So what it is, it's something that we as animals do when we're threatened. Unfortunately, this tends to come up in cases of domestic violence where women are encouraged to tend and to befriend, which is take care of themselves, take care of their children, find a group of people who can help them, and get out of the bad situation. So it's a shorthand for what you need to do if you find yourself threatened in the home environment. Tend and befriend.
Now, we've got one. It's fairly new on the Central Time team. We have pitch meetings where we go and share ideas, you know, pitch ideas for future shows. Sometimes if somebody needs to present their ideas at the beginning and then go back to work right away, they will pitch their ideas and leave. It has become called, and I don't know who coined this, pitch and ditch. And so I didn't come up with this one. Is this something we do a lot in workplaces or professional environments, come up with these catchy little phrases?
Yeah, the workplace, any place where we all spend a lot of time working on the same goals together, they tend to lend themselves to an in-house vocabulary, a kind of a jargon of the particular situation. The best example, obviously, is the military, where all of these people working together towards a common goal have to have these shorthands in order to just get their work done, and so they don't have to say the long version of everything. And that happens to a lesser degree in the workplace, absolutely.
Well, Grant, that's all the time we have. Thank you so much for joining us. Always fun to talk to you.
It was my pleasure.
That's Grant Barrett, a dictionary editor and linguist. He's co-host of Away with Words, a national program about language. You can hear the show Sunday mornings at 9, yes, here on the Ideas Network.